You're about to tune in to an exciting and extremely special episode. We are recording this in front of over 100 College of Business students at the second largest public university in America. That is my alma mater, the University of Central Florida. And what makes this episode the most special is that John and I have come prepared with nothing. Our content is going to be based solely around the questions asked by the audience. Our audience represents the future of America. They are the future business leaders. You're going to want to tune in to hear their questions and, more specifically, our answers. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children 18 plus, you are tuned in to the Loan Officer Podcast with me, Dustin Owen, and my main man,
JC.
John Coleman.
Yo, what is poppin'?
Back by demand,
Another
JC.
Another time. We're not even getting paid for this shit.
We are not getting paid for this shit, but we are at the Exchange. This is the University of Central Florida College of Business.
Cobb.
No one calls it Cobb.
I know, but I just did.
Okay, I don't think you're going to be able to get out of here safely
Most
if you call it Cobb.
Most of these kids aren't graduating on time, so it doesn't even matter.
All right, very good. But I'm excited. This is our third time being asked back, so that means we didn't totally suck the first two
Who's
times.
Who's struggling to graduate on time? Can I show our hands right here in the green? Come on. Solid.
Hey, you are JC's people right there.
Doesn't matter.
Right there. Yeah, what's that bar you like to go to? The library?
No. Bounce House?
Bounce House. There we go. Yeah, you see JC at Bounce, he'll buy you a drink with your fake IDs. But we are back for the listeners who've been tuning in or who check out the YouTube channel on a consistent basis. You will know this is one of my favorite episodes to do. And what I love about it is, A, I don't have to prepare for anything, which is probably my favorite way to speak and present. And it does two things. One is because I'm lazy. So if I don't have to prepare for something, it just makes my day that much easier. But more specifically, as a speaker or a presenter, I never know what the audience wants. And I'm a big fan. If you don't know what someone wants, ask them. So instead of us coming pre-prepared to talk about something you may or may not want to listen to, we'd much rather take your questions. That way, whenever we give our feedback or our advice, it's at least going to make one person happy. And I can guarantee you this, with an audience this large, if you have a certain thought or question or concern, you're not the only person in the room. In fact, I'm going to break some news to you, some bad news. You're not that special, right? To think that you're the only person that has that particular thought, that particular idea, that particular fear, nah, you're not that special. Nobody cares. In fact, if you don't ask your question, you're being a dick, right? Because you're not asking a question that someone else is too afraid to ask. So you could be a really good person and you could share your idea and your question. Therefore, you get your answer, but someone else gets their answer. How does that sound, John?
Well said.
You ready to get rocking and rolling? Do you have anything to say that's profound before we get started?
You know what? For the first time in my life, I don't.
That is odd.
Let's get started.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get started. Who has a question? Like, think about this. Like, hey, where am I in life? Where am I in my career? What's something I would want to know about adulting?
First question.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, JT. Shout out Jacqueline, everybody. Yeah, Round of applause for Jacqueline.
Yes. Yes. Intern extraordinaire. Yes, true story. She was sitting where you were sitting back in the fall semester. And then like 3 days later, she slid into my DMs. Was like, hey, I need this thing called an internship. And I was like, I don't think we have one of those. But I hopped on the phone with her. We started chatting and we created a position for her. She's our content manager. So she probably spends 10, 15 hours a week helping us take our content, chop it up, get it posted on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, stories, reels, etc. So really cool how things come full circle. And now she gets to come back 2 weeks before graduation. I think she said she was cramming for capstone just recently, has a big presentation coming up, but she's able to assist us with playing our Vanna White. For anyone who knows what that is, ask your grandparents.
Ask your grandparents.
First question.
So do you think that FHA loans are a good option for first-time home buyers?
Holy shit. Look at what this. Was that an industry plant?
Yes, we are geeking out, I didn't even plant it.
FHA loans.
So the question was because, for the rest of the audience, the TLOP listeners have just heard it because we have everything mic'd up. We have a hot mic in the audience. But for everyone else, she had asked me, do I think FHA loans are a good loan for home buyers? And the answer is pretty simply yes. An FHA loan is a very good loan product for someone looking to buy a home. Why do we like FHA loans? One, they're more lenient for things like credit blemishes. So they're less punitive. So I'm going to geek out a little bit. If someone were to pick a conventional 30-year fix versus an FHA 30-year fixed, and let's say your credit score was 680. 680 is good, but it's not great. It's not bad, but it's not great either. A 680 credit score, you're going to be penalized going with a conforming loan. That's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, because every 20 points you drop below 760, your interest rate goes up. FHA doesn't penalize like that. So a 680 gets the same interest rate as a 760, as maybe even like a 640 credit score would. FHA also is more lenient when it comes to things like debt to income ratio. So we can qualify borrowers with a slightly higher debt to income ratio going FHA than we can do in a conventional conforming loan. FHA only requires 3.5% down, but there's also conventional conforming loans with 3% down. So the down payment aspect isn't as much of a, I guess, a benefit. It's more about for somebody who has a higher debt to income ratio or maybe average credit and not great credit. If we're comparing two options for minimal money down, FHA would be a very good option for them. So great question. I like that one. Are you studying real estate?
No, I'm just considering moving soon right after I graduate. So I want to know, with all of the prices of houses being so difficult to deal with, like, what would be my best option?
I loved it. Awesome. Awesome. So her answer basically was one in which she's looking for herself. She's going to be graduating soon. She's going to want to buy a house. And curious if that was a good loan option. So yes, it is one of several good loan options for you. All right, who's next? By the way, it's anything goes, so don't think this has to be like geeky mortgage real estate related. Yep, right behind you, Jacqueline.
With how high interest rates are right now, is it worth buying or renting?
Awesome, I love that question. So the question was, with how high interest rates are, is it worth buying versus renting? Love where this is going. When you go to buy real estate, you buy real estate when it makes sense for you. When does it make sense for you? First and foremost, are you comfortable with where you are in your career? Meaning, do you have job stability and is your income predictable? Like, we start there. Are you comfortable with where you are geographically? Like, hey, do you like Orlando, Florida? Do you like Coral Springs? Or do you like Atlanta, Georgia? Because there's a certain barrier of entry when you go to own a home. Like, there's closing costs to purchase, there's closing costs to sell your home. And you have to factor in those costs up front versus those costs in the back end. If you're gonna be moving in 2 years, probably not. If you're gonna be somewhere for the next 5 years, it probably does. Interest rates should never be a deciding factor on whether or not you purchase a home. No different than like what the Dow Jones Industrial or the S&P is doing. Should never be why or why not you invest in an IRA or a 401k, right? Because everything that we do in life, if you want to be a self-made millionaire and you want to do it the boring old-fashioned way, it's a long game. It's a game of chess and not a game of checkers. So when you're playing the long game, you're not worried about, oh, rates are 7 today. No, does homeownership make sense for me today? Is that payment affordable for today? Do I like that home, that neighborhood? Do I feel safe living there? At which point, if the answer is yes and you can afford the payment, then you jump in. We had this saying in the industry, and it's called date the rate, marry the home. Right? Because a mortgage is nothing more than a financial instrument that allows us to purchase real estate, right? It's leveraged debt. So that instrument is what I use today. But if there's a better instrument in 2 years, i.e. rates go down to 5, I can always refinance out of that 7% rate and into that 5% rate. So never think of a mortgage as a 30-year thing. Yes, they're 30 years. Nobody has a mortgage for 30 years, right? Most people are going to sell their home within 7. And if they have their home for 10 years, they probably have refinanced at least one time. And if they own their home for 15 or 18 years, they probably found a way to pay it off quicker. So you don't think of it as a 30-year decision. Typically buying a house, especially your first house for the lady in the front, buying your first house is a minimum of 3, upwards of 7-year decision. So think of it as a 3 to 7 year decision, and never let whether or not rates are 3% or 7% or even 10% dictate whether or not you should become a homeowner. You should become a homeowner the minute it makes sense for you to become a homeowner. Great question.
Great answer.
Yeah.
I'm a full-time day trader. Last year I made about $135,000.
Let's trade spots then. You trading?
I trade futures, and I trade under an LLC, so I'm a W-2 employee to myself, so I don't have to pay short-term capital gains tax. And I want to buy my fraternity house because our homeowner sucks, and he doesn't do anything for us. A little bit scared to make that purchase because, you know, there's a new hole in the wall every day. Brothers come and post-game at the house, and it's the only house, like actual house, in the Greek ghetto. And the guy bought it for $80,000 in 2001, I think. And it's worth $800 right now. My question is, do I buy the house under my LLC using the FHA, or do I do it with just my own?
Okay, I freaking love this.
Who are you kids? We usually never get shit like this.
I love this. Now, unfortunately for the podcast audience who's tuning in, I'm going to need to repeat this for the audience because the mic is picking up for those on Spotify, Apple, and YouTube, but it's not picking up for the 100-plus students that we have sitting in the room here. So basically, humble brag, he's a day trader. He makes about $135 a year. He's not that bad looking, ladies. I don't know if he's single or not, but you should look that way. And he's part of Greek life. They're in the Greek ghetto, and he wants to purchase the home in the Greek ghetto. And he wants to know, should he utilize an FHA loan, like we just talked about, which, by the way, that particular loan product you can only use when you're purchasing a primary home. So I can't use it to go buy like some fancy Airbnb. Nope, it's only a primary home. Primary home means I'm gonna live in it. Or should he buy this under his LLC, which, by the way, when you're purchasing personal real estate and you're using our government-sponsored loan programs, that's Fannie, Freddie, VA, USDA, FHA, which, by the way, 80 to 90% of every loan that's written in our country is one of those products I just mentioned, right? So the government basically backs all of us becoming homeowners through this liquidity facility that they created, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, VA, USDA. Should he use his LLC? Because his day trading, he really smart, probably follows someone cool on TikTok who told him to do this, but he runs all of his day trading through his LLC. He does that for tax purposes. Because if he day traded, he'd have to pay capital gains tax versus day trading and maybe paying a corporate tax, which is a lower tax rate. On that, I can answer your question pretty simply. You're not going to be able to purchase what I'm deeming commercial real estate utilizing a loan product that is only for residential real estate. And because that home is a fraternity house and because that home is more than likely, I don't know how the brothers pay their dues or pay their rent, but that's something you're going to have to navigate. So going into it, you never want to go into any situation with a hard no. Like, everyone should hear these two words: it depends, or maybe. So maybe you can, maybe you can't. My initial guess or my professional assessment in your situation, I'm afraid this is going to be deemed by any bank or lender as a commercial property and not a residential property. It may have one day been a residential property, but the minute it became a fraternity house, at that point, you're going to have to look at the titling and from there figure out whether or not you can buy it in your LLC or not. But by the way, you could potentially buy in your LLC. There's a loan product called a DSCR loan. That's debt service coverage ratio. So it's basically, instead of qualifying you based on your income that you do or do not show, because if you don't show any income, I can't do a loan for you anyhow, right? Like, high five to you that you're evading Uncle Sam, but good luck getting a home loan, right? So like, I used to joke with people, either pay Uncle Sam and I can give you a home loan, or get good at paying cash for things, because it's hard to finance people who can't prove their income. So that's always a catch 22. But a DSCR loan, what I love about them, and I'll stop geeking out right after this, I love them because it's not about your income. It's all about, does the rent coverage the debt? So if your payment on $800,000 is $6,000 a month, if you're bringing in $8,000 a month in rent, then you have a nice coverage ratio, at which point if you put your 20 or 25% down, you could probably buy that home.
Cool. I would live there as well.
Yeah, you would live there as well. It's which, by the way, don't not look at FHA. I'm just giving you a heads up that it might not be as clear cut. Okay. Because I don't know I don't know enough about financing homes that fraternities have now, quote unquote, taken over. And I'd have to do some more research. So yes, you 100% should go into it trying to buy it utilizing an FHA loan. But then again, is it a single family home?
It is.
It's so if not it's a single family home and it's not in the county as being a duplex, triplex, or quadruplex, Now it's a one unit, and FHA has specific maximum loan sizes for when something's one unit, at which point an $800,000 purchase price is going to be way too high.
Right.
But you could potentially do a conventional loan with 5% down or a conventional loan with 3% down.
Okay.
Yeah.
It used to be like a quadplex, I think, because there's a kitchen upstairs and a kitchen downstairs and like unit numbers and all that, but it's all under one roof.
Yeah, so you would go to the property appraiser's website in Orange County. That's OCPAFL.org. And then you would do a record search, and you would see, is that home deeded as a quadruplex, a triplex, a duplex, or a single family?
Okay. Thank you, man.
Yep, and by the way, hit me up afterwards, and I can get you in contact with someone local who can facilitate all of that for you and do all the legwork.
All right, I appreciate it.
Awesome. What else you have? Ooh, in the back. Perfect.
Damn,
I love this. John's bored right now.
Fine. Don't ask me shit.
Ask him about video
don't
games.
Don't ask me nothing.
Ask him about
I won't
marketing.
Answer anything.
Ask him if
content
like
creation.
No, do not.
Editing.
I'll get up and leave.
Say howdy. So I have a question, and I'm a real estate agent here for Florida. And me and my wife are considering buying property, but in another state. But we're both veterans. We were both in the Marine Corps. And we're looking at either using the VA loan regular, but then I heard recently about a construction VA loan that we can use. And we don't. We've seen that there's properties. We've been looking at like a 100-acre property that already has homes, but a lot more pricey compared to just properties we've seen with land. And we were just wondering the construction VA construction loan and which one would be a better way.
Perfect. So first and foremost, thank you for your service. Semper Fi. Yeah, very cool. And even more cool, you're probably using your GI Bill to come to UCF and obtain your degree. So that's like way even cooler. You're looking to buy property outside of the state of Florida. Is that because you're going to move into that home?
Yes.
You are. And then when you move into that home, what are you going to do for employment in that new state?
So currently right now, I'm working for coal engineering right here in Research Park, but probably transitioning to remote work.
Okay, so you would still be gainfully employed, W-2, with your salary, all that good jazz.
Yep.
Cool, because the first place that my brain went, which is trained to basically underwrite for risk. That's what anything you look at insurance, you look whether it's life insurance, auto insurance, health insurance, or whether or not we should give someone financing, whether that's business financing, credit card financing, auto loans, or home loans, it's all about risk assessment. And that's really what life's about, is assessing risk and then making calculated decisions based on your decision of is that risk worth it or is that risk not worth it? And the first thing that I went to is, well, how am I going to do a loan for somebody who lives and works in Florida but wants to buy a property in Georgia? Unless I'm assuming it's Georgia, wherever it is that you're trying mm-hmm. to buy, because you can't buy a primary home in Georgia if you're working in Florida. But he answered that question because he's like, no, it's going to be remote work. Okay, cool. And he also answered this question. If he was a realtor, realtors are 100% commissioned. They're 1099. They're solopreneurs. Well, a realtor in Florida, the minute they move outside of Florida, you can't guarantee that they're going to make the type of money they made the past year or two, because now they're in a brand new market. They have to build out their clientele. So I start pre-underwriting you, but you're checking all the boxes, which is, nope, he can work remote. Nope, his income is going to be provable. Those are all good things for banks and lenders. So then it's just a matter of you wanting to buy a 100 acres. You're going to follow the VA guidelines on that. And the VA guideline is going to have specific language written. Like, if there's multiple homes on that 100 acres, how are they deeded? Is it commercial property? Is it aggregational? Is it agriculture? Agriculture. Holy cow, John. Yeah, I must have been in the car with you driving over here. Can't get that word out here.
You be walking if you were in the car with me on the way over here.
But a VA home loan is a phenomenal home loan. It's my favorite product out there. You should utilize it. But I think that's where we start with this. You have to have a great consultation with a local lender who can answer your questions, who can do a proper pre-approval, and then from there decide whether or not, you know, you're going to be able to buy that particular property. So here's a good lesson for those that are in real estate or looking to go into like home loan finance. You could have $1 million in the bank and you could have an 800 credit score. But if the collateral is a dog, we're not going to lend on it. Right? Because that is our pool in case of an emergency. When we foreclose on properties, I have to make sure it's a good property that I can resell and, if I have to foreclose on property, I have to make sure that I can actually like get my money back. So we don't necessarily lend on all types of properties because there's a certain risk assessment that goes on to it, regardless of 800 credit score and $1 million in the bank. So yeah, my answer probably is going to be, it sounds like this is something you can do. Obviously, you're not the only veteran or active duty that wants to live on a compound and you have a bunch of acreage. You just have to be careful that what happens if the value is all in the land and not in the home, then, you know, how does that potentially jeopardize financing?
Gotcha. Thank you.
Is that a good enough answer? Probably not like the most direct answer you wanted. Jacqueline, we have one all the way to your left, my right.
So I don't know about a lot about loans or like credit score or anything, but I've been thinking about like starting to build my credit. Do you know how long it like usually takes to like build your credit enough to like qualify for a loan for a house? Because I know it's something that I would want to do like in the near future.
Great question. So how long is it going to take to build my credit to buy a house? I'm gonna give you some credit hacks. And by the way, I didn't know anything about buying real estate or credit or personal finance or the day I interviewed for my first job in the mortgage industry. I literally had to ask my, essentially he became my boss, hey, so walk me through what my day would be. And as he would walk me through it, I would start throwing out, so does that mean I do this? He's like, nope. I'm like, does that mean I do this? He's like, nope. I'm like, then what do I do? Eventually he was able to explain to me that my job was to go out and market myself to realtors, builders, and financial advisors. And my job was to get them to refer me clients. Once they referred me clients, I then had to convince that client to use me and not their bank, not their credit union, or not the online lender, but to use me. And then once they used me, I was like, but I don't know how to do a loan. I got to figure out how to actually read a tax return, calculate income, what are loan programs, what are guidelines, how do I figure out this person qualifies? And that was about a 2-year process. And that's some free advice I give anybody. It takes you 2 years. I don't care what you're trying to do. It takes 2 years. If you can't commit 2 years to what you're wanting to do, then don't do it. It's not worth it. That's starting a business. That's launching a podcast. That's becoming a social media influencer. Like, it takes you 2 years before you're ever going to give yourself an opportunity to get any good. So the credit hack. First and foremost, not all of us have this, right? Some of us don't have the best relationship with our parents. Some of us maybe weren't raised by parents. Some of us have parents, but they have shitty credit, so this isn't going to work. You may have an aunt, you may have an uncle, you may have an older sibling, but if you want a hack, here's a hack. Have your parents add you to one of their credit cards that they use responsibly. By responsibly, meaning it's not maxed out and they don't miss payments. So the minute you have that, you at least start registering as someone with credit. Now, the second thing you need to do is go out and get credit, right? So go get a credit card. Even if it's a signer credit card, where that means you give your bank or credit union $500, they give you a credit card that has $500 worth of limit on it. So they're using your own money as collateral to then let you basically go out and charge. Cool. Or get with your landlord, depending on where y'all live, and see if your landlord, if your lease is in your name and not your parents' name, could you get your landlord to report? Because they have that opportunity, certain landlords, to report you to credit bureaus. Mm-hmm. Again, only do it if you're making your rent on time. If you're not making your rent on time, then don't do it. But ideally, my rule was always 6 months in a day. So have a credit card for 6 months in a day that you pay on time every time. And then more importantly, don't max it out. Even if it's only $500. And even if you're like homeboy in the back who makes 10 grand a month day trading, don't max it out. Because a maxed out credit card doesn't look good, even if it's always paid on time. So the rule of thumb is always, whatever your limit is, don't charge more than 50%. And then just pay it off every single month. Or at least pay it on time every single month and eventually figure out how to get it paid off without having to carry debt. So a hack, have someone that's older than you, that's more experienced at adulting than you, that has a credit card, then they're in good standing, add you as an authorized user, and then go out and try to establish your own credit. So then if you have like really awesome, cool parents that know a thing or two, they probably would have done authorized user. And when and if they purchase you a car, which again, that's like, you know, super privileged, but I'm looking around the room, I know a thing or two. I'm sure half of you probably came from super privileged. The other half of you are somewhere but below that. And there's varying degrees of below that. But if you are that super privileged, don't let mom or dad like go out there and like buy you that $16,000 Camry cash. No, go get a loan. let them finance it, let them put your name on that loan, because that's a nice hack too. So those are two things that I would tell you to possibly look at when establishing your credit. And look, even if you plan on never, ever owing anybody money, you should have credit. Like, you just do. Credit makes the world go around. It's the world that we live in.
Thank you.
Yep. No, great question. Thanks for asking it. Who else we got?
This is a question for Dustin. What was it like going into that interview, having zero experience in the mortgage loan world? And kind of how did you sell yourself?
Oh, that's a great question. It was very easy for me to go in because I had been selling. And I think it was easy for me because I'd also been working since I was 16 years old. So I'd worked at CVS Pharmacy. I'd worked at Home Depot. I worked at Papa John's. I bounced at a nightclub. You know, I'd run lumber departments. And I'd already interviewed for my first career job outside of graduating and all my part-time jobs. So then I had already interviewed for my next level up in that industry. So the time I was looking at changing careers, I kind of had been around the block once or twice, but the interview was easy for me because he had me sell him advertising. Because what he was looking for was a sales professional. He could teach me mortgage, but you can't necessarily teach people drive, tenacity, aptitude, desire. And he just wanted to make sure that I could sell. Once I could convince him I could sell, he's like, cool, you're hired. Let me train you. I now had to spend the next year learning mortgage while I was out selling, building my personal brand, and developing referral relationships. Cool. Y'all, you have been amazing. UCF, Justin, the entire college of business, thank you so much. That is all the time we have for you today. We look forward to catching you on the next episode. Peace.